Good afternoon. My name is Joshua Whitfield. The time is about 3 o'clock on October 6th, 2020. We're at the Amelia Island Museum of History, and we're speaking with Jean Mann. Jean, would you care to introduce yourself a little bit?
I'm Jean Dixon Mann. I grew up here in Fernandina and left when I was married in 1960 and returned in 1992 and have been here ever since. Don't intend on moving again. This was my 19th move in 32 years of marriage when we came back. And as I've jokingly said, my next move is going to be to Boscobello.
So you grew up in Fernandina?
Yes. Child. My family moved to Fernandina in 1942. My father had just gotten a job with Rayonier walking the affluent pipeline because Rayonier was considered a strategic industry. They did not want to have any sabotage on their affluent pipeline that emptied into the ocean. So his job was to walk the pipeline with the shotgun every day until he was able to find until there was an opening in the main factory. And he then went into the power plant, which was the first opening that they had, and worked there for the rest of his life. He eventually became the chief engineer of the power plant, and he was the only person at that time who held that position who did not have a college degree. When my family first came here, their home was what you'd probably call a little one-room travel trailer at this point in time. And they first parked the trailer at Herring's Filling Station, which is now, or was, the Cinnamon Bun, right there on 8th Street. But it was Herring's Filling Station at the time. They stayed there for a short time and then moved the trailer out to the beach, to what we used to call the casino, because the Hutchins wanted, who were running the casino restaurant, wanted to have somebody on the premises at night. The state, for some reason, didn't want a family in a trailer parked there overnight, so they only stayed there for a short time and then bought a house on South Fletcher, just north of what's now Elizabeth Point Lodge. The house was torn down maybe 5 to 10 years ago.
Did it sustain any damage from Dora? That was around the 60s, was it?
No. My family lived on the beach until 1949.
Oh, my mistake. I'm sorry.
And in 1949, they built a house on Alachua Street between 16th and 17th Street. And I must tell you, the real pronunciation of A-L-A-C-H-U-A is Alachua. And I know that because one of the old memorials that were written to Congress when Florida was still a territory was signed by the people of Alachua County, and it was spelled in the memorial Elotchowa.
Is that an Indian origin?
It's a name of Indian origin. As you know, during the territorial time, there were very few counties. St. John's, Alachua, and Nassau were about the main counties, plus Escambia over near Pensacola.
And what's interesting is when the city of Fernandina Beach was platted, they decided to name the streets after the counties going north. Mm-hmm.
So, yes,
so and Alachua was the first street
north.
I'm curious, when you mentioned casino, was that at Main Beach? Where was it?
It was at Main Beach. it was just south of where the parking lot ends now, and it was a huge two-story building. And I think if you look on Facebook on Remember When Fernandina Beach, there's a picture of the casino there. The downstairs was part restaurant and part rental units, rental area for rafts and inner tubes and that sort of thing. It was built up on stilts, and at high tide, the water usually came underneath it. The upper floor was a bowling alley and a skating rink, and the skating rink was many times used for a dance floor.
On the upstairs
of the casino.
So that was quite a center of activity.
It was quite a center of activity, and it was there through most of the time that I was in high school. Probably it was torn down in the mid-1950s, but you've probably also heard of the Strathmore Hotel, which was out at the beach at the early part of the 20th century. And the best location for that is probably about a block and a half at sea in front of Elizabeth Point Lodge.
A block and a half at sea,
because when I was growing up at extremely low tide, and the beach was much wider at low tide than it is now, at extremely low tide, we could go out almost over our heads and find some of the pilings that were left from the Strathmore.
Wow.
I've never heard of any salvage from that. I knew it.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Although I think with this last storm a week and a half ago, there must have been a submerged shipwreck that was partially broken up, because the beach was just filled with teeny tiny little pieces of driftwood. I mean, there were millions of little pieces of driftwood no bigger than my thumb.
Oh, fascinating.
Jean, could we run back to your, you mentioned attending high school. Did you attend Fernandina High School?
I attended Fernandina Beach High School, all 12 grades, and in what is now the administration building. My class was the last class to graduate from that building. The class of 1956. There were 58 of us in the class that graduated. 22 of us had gone all the way from first grade through 12th grade together.
Wow. Are you in touch with some of those people now? Do you have
Yes,
a
yeah. yeah. We had reunions regularly until about 3 or 4 years ago, but it's gotten more and more difficult for people to get together. But I am still in touch with some of the class members who live in the area. Many of us moved back here after having moved away when we were married.
And then you went on to college?
I attended Florida State University and received a degree in elementary education. I went to Florida State instead of the University of Florida because it was a little further from home. At the time, I had an aunt who worked in the athletic department at the University of Florida, and my grandparents lived in Williston, which is only 10 miles south of Gainesville, and it's only 2 hours from Fernandina. And I was afraid that I wouldn't spend much time on the weekends at school like I probably should. And so FSU at that time was 4 hours away because I-10 had not been built at the time.
Oh, my goodness. In terms of your family, you had your mother and the father, and did you have any siblings?
I had a brother who passed away in 1991. He was younger than I, just the two of us. And he had been born at the old Humphreys Memorial Hospital on 14th Street.
Did you, so you mentioned you moved multiple times in the past, I think 19 times is what you said earlier. Was it Were you married to someone who's moving? Were you moving yourself? Did you have...
My husband was in the military for the first 7 years of our marriage, and then he was in commodities, selling gold and silver for the most part. And so we moved where his job took us.
Where did you meet your husband?
Pardon?
May I ask where you met your husband at?
I met my husband at Florida State University. He was dating my next door neighbor in the dorm. But when I started dating him, they'd have already broken up. So, and we were married right after both of us had graduated from FSU. I graduated in 3.5 years, graduating in January, and came back to Fernandina and taught where I had gone to school for that one semester. So Miss Dixon was on one side of the teacher, one side of the principal's office, and Mrs. Dixon, my mother, was on the other side of the principal's office.
Oh, wow. And about what year was that?
That was 1960, the spring semester of 1960. And then I taught the next semester in Orlando, Florida, and then my husband went into the military and...
Off you went.
And off I went.
Where was your favorite place to live besides Fernandina?
Fernandina is the only place I ever wanted to live. And we lived in California for 17 years. And it was a good time to live in California when we were there. But... Fernandina was the only place I ever wanted to live. My husband knew this, and it had been my idea that when I was left alone, I would move back to Fernandina. Well, when my brother passed away in 1991, my husband saw an ad in the paper for a house for sale on Christmas Eve. He could hardly wait until the day after Christmas to be able to go and look at the house. And he said, "We're moving here." And I said, "We're moving here." I said, "You know, you're working as a consultant where it doesn't matter where you are. You just have to be near an airport," because he was going back and forth to, at that time, the Soviet Union. But my job in California was the one that paid the monthly bills.
And what did you do, Jean?
I went back to California 1 week a month for 11 years. The man that I was working for said, "I can't afford to lose you. We've got a Watts line. We've got fax machines. I only need you to be here 1 week a month to make sure that the receivables and payables are in order for the CPA. So for 11 years, I flew back to California 1 week
a
month.
So it was an accounting firm that you worked for?
I worked for an ice manufacturer.
An ice manufacturer?
I worked for an ice, I was the controller for an ice manufacturer.
When you were traveling during those times, the military and all of that, would you come back and visit your parents?
Yeah, I always came back to visit here with, you know, in Fernandina. Mm-hmm. In 1956, my parents bought an empty lot on Ocean Avenue, and a few months later they found somebody that wanted to move a house that they had on South Fletcher off of their property, and my parents bought it and moved it in the middle of the night.
Why in the middle of the night?
Well, because there was no traffic in the middle of the night, and they're moving a house down South Fletcher from South Fletcher to Ocean Avenue. They paid $250 for the empty lot. They paid $1,000 for the house and another $1,000 to move it. And when I inherited the house in 2013, I've spent way more money than that on maintaining it.
Absolutely.
Jean, one thing that is very interesting to us at the museum is your history with your museum. Can you tell us You were involved in the early, early days.
When I came back to Fernandina in 1992, since I was doing this commute, I had a lot of free time on my hands, and I wanted to get re-involved in things. I'd always loved history, so I came down to the museum and started volunteering here. It wasn't long. Dion Jacquard was the director at that point in time, and she talked me very quickly into becoming the treasurer on the board. There was a period of time when there was some disruption with the board of directors, and I was the only elected member of the board that was still on the board of directors. There were some volunteers, and I managed to talk some of the others into taking over positions because I thought it was more important for me to maintain the financial records. And at that time, I wrote the payroll checks, did all of that.
Weren't you involved with negotiations with the county?
Yes. During that period of time, we were having a lease come up in the not-too-distant future on this building, the old jailhouse. And so I had the idea that why don't we extend this lease as long as we could? And so we negotiated a new lease with the county for 99 years for $1, total $1. The county was able to keep the one room that they had that they were using for, 911 at the time. And part of that was that they were allowed to keep that as long as they wanted to. I wrote a check for $1, sent it to the county commission for the 99-year lease, and the check didn't get cashed, and the check didn't get cashed. And I called and I said, "Do you have our check for $1? Why haven't you cashed it?" "Well, it's only $1. I said, "You have to cash that check because that is the legal finality that our lease is in good order." So they cashed the check. When it came back in, those were the days when you got your checks back, the cancel check was stapled to the lease, which should be somewhere in the records here.
So we skipped ahead a little bit. I want to get back to when you first arrived back in the community. Could you comment a little bit on how Fernandina Beach had changed between when you left in around 60 and came back?
Well, when I came back, of course, there had been the revitalization of Center Street. When I was growing up, Center Street was one straight street, much wider than it seems today. In football season, there was a parade every time there was a home game.
Oh, wow.
Now, it might only be the band that was in the parade, but we had a parade on the Friday afternoon before the football game. Homecoming weekend always had some floats in it, a few more people in the parade. High school dances were held out at what was called the Jetty Lodge out at Fort Clinch. It was an area that, in fact, it was probably the only large place in town for anybody to have a dance of any sort. Fort Clinch was not blocked off. You could ride down Fort Clinch anytime you wanted to. By the time I was in high school, they had paved the road, which caused many of the guys to decide to see who could drive the fastest down the paved road, because before that it had been just an oyster shell road.
Where was the Jetty Lodge within the property of the Fort Clinch?
It out near where the pier is, out that direction. When you get to the fork in the road, mm-hmm. you went to the right, and it was down probably just at the end of the road there, and it was south of where the campgrounds are now.
So it was on the ocean.
Sort of on the ocean. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, so the adults had dances out there. High school students always had a dance out there after football games.
Was it very decorative? Was it? I know about.
We can't hear you on the microphone.
I'm sorry. I was asking how decorative. Was it very fancy?
No, it was. You know, it was. It was a lodge. It was had a dance floor. It had a kitchen in it. There may have been some extra smaller rooms, but that I don't remember.
Who owned it?
I think.
That question again.
Who owned it?
Okay. So let's talk about that expansion for
okay.
the HGC.
In 2001, St. Michael's Church wanted to expand and the church into a cruciform from the original building. When they brought their plans to the Historic District Council, it appeared to me that they were going to encroach onto the Fernandez Grant with their expansion. And my concern was that if they were going to do that, they would need the permission of all of the living descendants in order to encroach on that property. So I started research trying to find the descendants of the Fernandez family. Research took me to Savannah. I went to Washington, D.C., to the archives in Southern California, Orlando, Jacksonville, the records that we had here in the museum, trying to find all of these descendants. That eventually turned into a book with the being a genealogy of the Fernandez family. I eventually found descendants living in England, in Australia, some who had been raised in Africa. At that time, research, the ability to research was not as great as it is today. So there was information that had not been published at that point. I mean, I published a book in 2009. The church eventually, they got very angry with me and with the other members of the HGC, but the bishop finally decided that they could not expand onto this property, that you can't build on property you don't own. They, when the church did do their expansion property project in 2014, they did stay within lots 1 and 6 that they had.
I'm sorry, real quick. You mentioned the bishop. Could you clarify something about the church leadership?
Okay. In the Catholic Church, the bishop is the owner of all property, mm-hmm. not the local priests. And back in 2001, the local priest had signed the request to the HGC, which was another problem. He can't sign it because he doesn't own it. So the bishop got involved. The bishop finally realized that he did not own this. One of the descendants and I went down to the archives of the Sisters of St. Joseph and St. Augustine wanting to see if they had any information that would be useful. And when we walked into the archives, Sister Joseph Thomas had a table set up with 2 yellow pads, pencils, 2 sets of white gloves, and 2 boxes, 2 archive boxes on the back of the table, and 1 folder between the 2 yellow pads. And before we could even sit down, she says, do you want copies of everything in the folder? And I just had goosebumps because I knew there was something in that folder that was important. What the most important things in there were two letters from two separate bishops saying, the church does not own this property. The sisters do not own this property. The descendants of Domingo and Mary own the property. And so once I found that, I knew that I had to put it into a printed form so that people in the future would have access to it.
What was the response of the descendants that you contacted?
Some of the descendants, some of them had no idea that they were descendants of Domingo and Mary Fernandez, particularly those in England and Australia. But others were fascinated to have somebody bring their history to them. Some of the ones that had lived over in the Folkestone area knew that they were descendants, and they also knew that they had the right to be buried there. And I know now that there is at least one descendant and his three sons that do intend to be buried there.
Has anybody other than the graves that we recognize now, has anyone been buried on that acre of land?
I don't know. I have no idea because in the plantation era, it was common practice for the slaves or household servants or even family friends to be buried in the family cemetery outside of the area that was designated for the family. So it's been 200 years. There may be some bones out there. I don't know. Because of this, it's been upsetting that St. Michael's Church, St. Michael's Academy, has encroached onto 50% of the property as a playground for their school. And this has been the latest thing that the family has been fighting. And I have just recently collected over 30 letters, notarized letters from family members saying they do not want the church to do anything except to maintain the property as they said they would.
Did you get any significant pushback back in 2001 when you originally...
Yes. One night for one of the HDC meetings, members of the Catholic parish marched in unison down to our meeting. At that point in time, there were two members of the HDC who were members of the Catholic Church and another one who... his wife was a member of the Catholic Church, and he attended with her. One of the members was removed from his job as a parish layman who worked with the priest for masses. The priest at the time denigrated us from the pulpit of the church by name. And I even had friends who wanted to know why I was walking downtown by myself. You know, I'm not going to be frightened by this. It was just part of something that had to be done, and
Well, what a gift to the Fernandez family and to the city of Fernandina Beach.
I think it's important to maintain something, and my research has shown this is probably the last Spanish land grant mm-hmm. in Florida. I mean, that is still a Spanish land grant because it's never left family hands.
I'm pretty sure, being a Catholic, that the Catholic newspaper out of magazine out of St. Augustine has brought up this cemetery in this publication, and I'm not sure when that was.
I'm sure.
I know that I'm in possession of several different letters at different times from different bishops saying that they would not encroach upon the property. I just recently sent these letters from the descendants to the priest, to the bishop, and have not gotten a response yet. One of the other things that I did after I came back to Fernandina was to establish the Amelia Island chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution.
I was about to ask you about that. So you are actually a very high-ranking officer in that chapter, are you not?
I was the organizing regent.
Okay.
And in the Daughters of the American Revolution, there's only one president, and that's the president general. And the leader of each of the chapters or the states is called a regent because she's speaking for the president. But I organized the chapter here because the closest one was in Jacksonville, and I didn't want to have to go to Jacksonville once a month for a meeting. We organized with 18 members in 1993, and we have almost 200 now.
When did you originally organize this chapter?
In 1993.
1993, so right after you got
it. Yes, I worked on the organizing between 1992 and 1993. We organized on September the 15th, 1993. We had to have a minimum number of members in order to organize. And so that's when we did that. I later became state regent for the state of Florida, Daughters of the American Revolution, and from 2010 to 2013, I served as the organizing secretary general for the National Society.
This ties into your genealogy.
Yes, it all ties into genealogy.
What is the prerequisite to be a daughter of the American Revolution?
You have to be able to trace your ancestry to someone who either served in the military in the American Revolution or gave service to the efforts of the Patriots, either donating money, donating food, being a civil servant.
And who was your ancestor or ancestors that you...
I have about 15 that I have found. If every single ancestor had given service, I would have the possibility of 520.
Wow.
But I've only found 12 or 14. My original ancestor was Richard Griffin, and then William Simpson, his son John Simpson, Thomas Parker, none of them from Florida, although my family has been in Florida since at least 1800.
That's incredible. Where were they?
They came into Boulogne over in West Nassau County.
Oh, my goodness.
And I did not know this until I was probably 40 years old. My father never knew that his family had lived over there. And there are plots still on the maps that have John Dixon on it, who was my ancestor.
So they were English, I assume?
I assume they were English. They came down from South Carolina to Georgia to Florida, and probably looking for more land or a place. I have copies of the Spanish land grants from 1805, and in 1805 it said they had lived here at least 5 years. And at that point it was Spanish, and so in order to get a land grant, you had to at least verbally express your allegiance to the King of Spain and that you were a member of the Catholic religion.
have you been involved in many other organizations on the island aside from the DAR and the museum and the HGC?
I'm a member of the historical, the Duncan Lamont Clinch Historical Society.
When did you join the society?
Oh, I can't really remember. I know that I'm now the membership, I got roped into being the membership chairman now, so so that's keeping me busy now.
So you're very active in just recording and maintaining the history of this area.
Yes, you know, the history of Fernandina.
What do you think is the most important thing that people should take away from the history of Fernandina today?
You know, we're the only place in the United States that's been under eight flags. I think it's important for newcomers to learn something about our history and to appreciate our history and not try to change us into what they were back where they came from. I think our history is important for us because it's laid the foundation for what we are today. You know, if we had not had our history, we wouldn't have the historic downtown that we've got. If we hadn't had fires in 1885, we wouldn't have the brick buildings that are still here. And had we not had a depression back in the 20s, 30s, we wouldn't have all of the historic homes that are still here, because we had become sort of a backwater at that point in time after we wouldn't let Henry Flagler bring his railroad here. Fernandina sort of died, and people lived in the houses that they had and maintained the houses that they had. So as a result, I mean, we've got so much history that if people would just go and explore the history. That was one of the reasons I became involved in the museum to start with, because it was a way to help maintain this history, to, you know, giving walking tours for visitors, telling them about the history so that they knew what had gone on here. You know, the two mills that are here now have brought both prosperity, brought the economy back in the late 30s. There have been both good and bad to having the pulp mills here on the island, but they have, even though they're more recent, they are still an important part of the evolution of our history.
Do we have any more questions for Mrs. Jean? Well, Jean, thank you so much for joining us. Did you have a question?
No, I just think I will say, as a member of the community now, I'm thankful for all you've done and do to preserve the history.
Well,
we are blessed.
It has been my pleasure and joy to do so, and when you turn it off, I'll.
You can turn it off anyway.
Thank you, Jean.
the rewrite of the book is, as I said, is at the printers now.
And that is Family Legacy.
It's a Family Legacy, and I'm just calling it the second edition. It will have a new barcode because there was too much that had been added to it to use the old barcode. It'll have a different cover. I'm using a picture of the marker as the cover picture for the book. But 3 years ago, I was contacted by a descendant who said that they had done DNA and had proven that they were members of the family, And this is of the Fernandez family. And this is a black woman who lives in New York City.
I love it.
One of the sons of one of the daughters that, in fact, she said, she wrote to me and she said, you said that DeWitt was living with his housekeeper. Well, he said they had probably a 20-plus year common law relationship. They had at least 12 known children and that grew to adulthood. The family history was that there was a set of twins that died in infancy. But with this additional information and what she provided me, and she provided me with a picture of DeWitt that I had never found, and with these 12 children and all of the children they've had, each family has had at least one child either named DeWitt, DeWitt Clinton, or Clinton. And they had traced their genealogy back through, and they'd gotten a copy of my original book and knew some of the people to contact, and through DNA contacts they had determined that yes, they...
I can't remember. I'm familiar with the book. You don't go back further than
than Domingo.
Yeah, then Domingo.
Mary. I do mention who their parents were, but that's as far back as I went. I started the descendants of Domingo Fernandez and Mary Mater.
Well, hopefully we can have you back maybe a few months down the road for another interview about that research.
Yeah, and the other thing is with as you say, with increased technology, I was able to find out more information on the descendants of... the oldest daughter, Mary Patricia Figueroa. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you Jean, and we will go ahead and shut off the recording now.
Oh, I thought it was already shut off.